And now, here's Janine Garofalo's favorite teabagging rednecks. Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I am your host, Mark Gillar. What a special show we have lined up for you today. We're going to be speaking with J. Christian Adams. He is the author of the explosive new book, Injustice, Exposing the Racial Agenda of the Obama Justice Department. You'll recall that Mr. Adams resigned from the DOJ whenever the Barack Obama / Eric Holder Justice Department decided to drop its case against the new Black Panther Party. Mr. Adams will be with us in just a few minutes, but first, Herman Cain dared to venture into the heart of Rick Perry country by setting up a book signing at a Hastings bookstore located just a few blocks away from the southeastern corner of Texas A&M University. Texas A&M is where Governor Perry received his degree and also served as a Yell leader. Was Herman Cain able to wow the Texas crowd? Find out when we come back.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
If you're interested in how you can get your own solar-powered electrical backup system, go to teapartypowerhour.com and look for the ad at the bottom right-hand portion of the page. While you're visiting our page, you'll also see ads for things like solar ovens, water purification systems, and survival kit bug-out bags. As I promised you before the break, we're going to talk about the Herman Cain book signing in College Station, Texas, the heart of Aggieland, the heart of Governor Perry country. And I promise you I'd tell you whether or not it was successful and whether or not Herman Cain wowed the Texas crowd. And the answer is a resounding yes to both questions. As I approached the building, couldn't find a parking spot. This is a huge shopping center. Had to park on the far opposite end. It was obvious that something very, very big was going on in the center that day. And when I went through the doors, standing room only, I was quickly approached by a member of the Hastings staff who told me that they were sorry, but they were out of books. Fortunately, I already had one with me, and plus I was there to interview Mr. Cain anyway. So I looked around, I saw people of all ages, children who looked like they were in grade school, grandparents, people of all color. It was obvious that as much as Barack Obama has been a divider, that Herman Cain is going to be a uniter. And what I can tell you is that this is one of the most personable, down-to-earth individuals that one is ever going to meet, let alone meet in someone who is a front runner in a primary for the presidency. I got a chance to sit down with Herman Cain and ask him a couple of questions, and we'll go to that interview right now.
Mark, nice to meet you. Tea Party Power Hour.
Absolutely. Good
night. Very good.
The Occupy Wall Street movement has made it to Texas. They're
going
to be in Austin tonight outside of the city council. They're in Houston right now outside the J.P. Morgan building. You've been critical of that movement, suggesting maybe they're in the wrong place. Do you think perhaps they should be outside of the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or maybe Barney Frank's house? Where should they be?
First of all, I'm not sure what they're protesting. If all they're doing is trying to heighten the class warfare fight that's being stroked by this president, I think that is a waste of time. Secondly, if they're frustrated because they don't have jobs, if they're frustrated because this economy is not moving, they ought to be protesting the White House because of the failed policies. Thirdly, I happen to believe that this is an intentional distraction to create in the media and in the minds of the American people so they won't focus on the failed policies of this administration. And so the other point that I would say to these Wall Street protesters, whoever they are, wherever they are, look, Abraham Lincoln said the best, you don't help the poor by trying to hurt the rich. Secondly, the United States of America was not built upon redistribution of income and wealth. If you are envious of somebody that happens to be rich, that you call a fat cat, go and get rich instead of expecting them to walk outside of their office and write you a check. That's not the way America works. Work for it. I'm not mad at you.
I understand.
I understand. You're preaching to the choir. Now, very quickly, you had called Governor Perry insensitive regarding the now infamous Perry Rock scandal. DOJ attorney J. Christian Adams has just released a book in which he says Barack Obama shared a podium with and marched with the new Black Panther Party. How do you view that in terms of racial insensitivity?
First of all, let's be clear of what I said about Governor Perry.
Please.
I said that that sign on that rock was insensitive.
Okay.
I did not indict Governor Perry, and I even stated, I do not believe, regardless of when they painted over that sign on that rock, the name was insensitive. Secondly, I do not believe the name on that rock in any way indicates how Governor Perry feels about Black people in America. I've got the greatest amount of respect for the man. So I don't see a story beyond the insensitivity of it being there as long as it was there. Now, to get to the other part of your question about the president, what did he say he was with?
He was marching with the new Black Panther Party in Selma, Alabama. He shared a podium with them. And a lot of people on the right think of the new Black Panthers as being the black version of the Ku Klux Klan. So where do you rank that event in terms of racial insensitivity?
Well, I think it says more about some of President Obama's beliefs. I happen to believe in the Martin Luther King Jr. model of how you change America and how you become a part of America, and you do that nonviolently, not trying to intimidate people. So I think it's more of a reflection of President Barack Obama in terms of maybe some of his beliefs, but my approach is more the Martin Luther King Jr. style.
They told me I had 2 minutes. I'm over that. I hope the next time I interview you, it's President Kane.
I like your positive thinking. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the interview. I appreciate it.
Hey, happy to do it.
While I was there, I decided to interview a number of people in line, both before and after the book signing, to see what they think of Herman Kane and why they are supportive of him. Here are some of those interviews.
What's your name?
Derinda Elm.
Why are you here today to see Herman Kane?
To get his book signed. And just to be able to meet him. I really am encouraged by his stand on different issues that agree with mine.
Right now, would you say that he's the candidate you support the most?
Yes, actually. I am still making up my mind, but yes, based on his conservative values, I definitely am leaning more toward him.
Thank you. Sir, what's your first name?
Richard.
Richard, why are you here today to see Herman Kane?
I admire Herman Kane for coming up through the poverty levels through and making what he's made himself. He's a real leader.
Now, I understand you're one of the people in line without a book. Is the whole town sold out a book?
I don't know. My wife's trying to find one for me right now.
Well, wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
What's your name?
Haley Dowdle.
How old are you?
I'm 21.
21. Do you think that Herman Kane has the chance to win more of the youth vote than John McCain did last time?
I sure hope so. I love Herman Kane.
Why do you love Herman Kane?
Actually, my 19-year-old brother is the one who got me started paying attention to Herman Kane, and I just love his values and his conservatism, and I think he'd be a great president.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
What's your name?
Chris Brown.
Chris, why are you here today?
Come to see Herman Kane. I'm real excited about his message and want to, you know, show him that I support him.
Would you say at this point that he's your leading candidate for the presidency?
I'd say he's the one I feel the best about right now.
And why is that?
I feel like he speaks very openly, honestly, and is not, you know, your typical politician.
Do you think it's time for a business person in Washington, or are you bothered by the fact that he has no political experience?
I'm encouraged by the fact that he has no prior political experience.
How do your coworkers feel about Herman Kane?
They're generally supportive. I work in a conservative industry, and so we generally have good feelings for Herman.
What's your first name?
Molly.
You said you had a message you wanted to get to Herman Kane. What is that?
That I hear an awful lot of people criticizing him for his so-called lack of foreign policy experience.
Yeah.
And what you do is there is no president in history that has ever been equally good in foreign policy and domestic policy.
True.
And what we are absolutely desperate for is an economic god, and he's it. I mean, he's done it. He's brought back companies from the brink. He's hired and fired. He's made payroll. He
yeah.
knows what to do. And if it's a subject area that he doesn't know about, then you get the very best qualified people, not some crony from Chicago, to give you the information you need.
Very good. I'll try to get that message to him.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Jim, what are you doing here today?
I'm here to see Herman Kane.
Are you a big supporter of Mr. Kane?
I'm a very big supporter of Mr. Kane.
Would you say of all the Republicans that are currently in the race, he's your favorite?
He's been my favorite since he announced his candidacy.
And why is that?
Because I've known of him from the Neil Bortz show. I've liked what he had to say. He's proven himself to be an effective business leader, and I think he's got a lot of good plans for our country.
Are you bothered at all by his lack of political experience?
Actually, I'm excited about his lack of political experience.
I'm hearing that a lot.
So, no, that doesn't bother me a bit.
Okay. We've had a number of other business people try to make a run at it with no political experience. Ross Perot, Donald Trump briefly. What makes you think it might work this time?
Well, I think that Mr. Kane has a better presence than any of the other candidates like Perot or Donald Trump or any of those guys did. They seem to come off as being in it for themselves, whereas Mr. Kane seems to come off as being in it for the country.
Well said. What's your name?
I'm Cooper McCall.
How old are you?
I'm 14.
14? What do you like about Herman Cain?
He's just the best candidate, and he's not a career politician at all. Like, he hasn't been corrupted, and I like his 999 plan.
Is it killing you that you can't vote this time?
Yes.
Well, let's say you're 14. Maybe you can vote for a second term.
Yes, I will.
Thanks for the interview. Sir, what's your name?
Kyle Klancik.
What made you come out here today?
I've been watching future President Kane on all the debates, and he's my favorite candidate. I mean, he's not a career politician. He's a businessman. I'm a business student here at A&M. He's a common-sense conservative with good fiscal policy, and he's just somebody that we need in office. We don't need, hope and change. We need stability and growth. That's what this country needs. And
well, everybody else got their book signed. You got your T-shirt signed. How cool is that?
Well, I didn't even have a book. I tried to come out here and buy a book, and thank God I had my shirt on. I bought this online for $30, but it was worth every penny. I'm never washing this shirt again.
What's your name?
My name is Mike Tate.
Mike, what brought you out here today?
Come see Herman Cain, the next president of the United States.
So what makes you such a big Herman Cain fan?
I believe in everything he's saying. I mean, he's about the country and he's about moving us in the right direction.
Finally, I talked with Wes, one of many Hastings managers who had traveled to the event, so that I could ask him in his eyes how successful the Herman Cain book signing had been.
Well, we had 550 books. Several people had two or three people per book and turned away a lot of people because we only had 550. I would say at least 1,500, if not 2,000 people came.
Now, my understanding is you not only did some good business for yourself here today, but you helped your competitors out because every bookstore in Bryan-College Station is sold out now.
Sure they are. I'm sure they are.
Is this one of the better book signings you've had in a while?
This is the first one I've been to with the company, but here it's the best one we've had in College Station. So,
thanks for the interview.
You know, I have to laugh whenever I hear liberal idiots like Janine Garofalo say that the Tea Party is paying Herman Cain to run so we can falsely claim that we're not a bunch of racists. As I looked at the crowd that came out to see Herman Cain, I saw people of all ages, very young, very old, people from all walks of life, retired military people, good old boys wearing hunting caps, foreign students who attended nearby Texas A&M University, just a wide range of people who like the message that this man is putting out. As I watched him mingle through the crowd and I saw the smiles on their faces, and it was like being at some extremely joyous occasion. Everyone was just so glad that this gentleman was running for president. It dawned on me that not only does Herman Cain have the potential to undo the damage that Barack Obama has done in terms of dividing this nation, but he has the potential to make us closer than we've ever been before. I'll be right back with J. Christian Adams after this message.
Hi, I'm Brian Brody. Have you ever lost your power and simply wanted to flip a switch to turn your lights back on? If so, this message is the most important you will ever hear, because there's never been a better time to get off the grid and generate your own supply of electrical power. Solar power generators are now available. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving electrical power when you need it most. Unlike gas generators, a solar generator runs quietly, emits no fumes, and produces electricity from the sun. It's like running an electric power plant in your own home. Hurricanes, ice storms, brownouts, blackouts, you'll never suffer through painful power outages again.
If you have an interest in a solar-powered emergency backup system, a solar-powered oven, water purification systems, or perhaps a survivalist kit bug-out bag, go to teapartypowerhour.com and click on the ads on the right side and the bottom of the page. And now, let's move on to our next guest, J. Christian Adams. He served for 5 years as an attorney in the voting section of the United States Department of Justice. In that capacity, he brought cases to protect a wide variety of minorities, including blacks, Hispanics, and the first ever application of the Voting Rights Act to protect white voters. He is also a former general counsel to the South Carolina Secretary of State, and he is now a practicing attorney and a contributing writer to Pajamas Media. He's here to talk to us about his new book, Injustice, Exposing the Racial Agenda of the Obama Justice Department. Mr. Adams, welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. It's an honor to have you here today, sir.
Great to be here.
You know, as I think back through my lifetime, names like Karen Silkwood and Sharon Watkins at Enron and Anita Moncrief at Acorn pop to mind when I think of you, someone who had the courage to risk it all, put their careers on the line in order to tell a truth that must be told. So before we do anything today, I just want to congratulate you on having the courage to come forward with this story while you were still part of the DOJ. Because it takes just a tremendous amount of character to do what you did. And on behalf of all Americans, I thank you for doing it.
Well, thanks a lot.
To say the least, it must not have been an easy decision for you to make at the time.
Well, it actually was. I mean, the facts are so obvious to me, and the principles at stake are so important that there really didn't seem to be any other pathway. When you have men in front of polls with weapons shouting racial slurs about people about to be ruled by the black man, and then you have a government who does something about it under one administration, and then the Obama administration comes in and dismisses the case, and you're under a subpoena from the Civil Rights Commission to testify about the case, it wasn't really a tough choice for me. I mean, the law is too important. Equal protection is too important. The rule of law is too important. It wasn't that difficult of a choice for me.
Now, just to go back a little bit for listeners who may not be completely familiar, essentially King Shabazz, I think also known as Maurice Heath or something like that,
yeah,
and another Black Panther were in front of a Philadelphia polling place waving these metal batons and intimidating voters that were going in to vote. And there was actually a longtime Democrat that was present that day who said that he felt intimidated by their activities. Who was that gentleman?
Bartle Bull.
Yeah. And
he was the editor of the Village Voice. He edited the Village Voice. He's a former civil rights attorney, and he was poll watching that day.
So there's really no question that this was intimidating behavior.
It wasn't to anyone who worked on the case, no.
Now, what was interesting, I did a little digging on our friend Maurice Heath. He's been convicted of a felony, and I was actually very shocked to find out what that felony was. Do you recall, or have you been told?
I think I know, but tell me.
He beat the heck out of his girlfriend with a baton, exactly like the one he was waving at the Philadelphia polling place that day.
That's exactly right. And let me tell you what else is interesting about that felony conviction. Under federal law, if you're a felon, you cannot be in possession of a handgun.
And he's all over the internet. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You beat me to the punch, Mr. Adams. That was going to be one of my questions for you. As a convicted felon, how is it that he's all over the internet, all over YouTube, waving handguns? Now, certainly this cannot have escaped the attention of the Philadelphia Police Department.
Well, it's a federal violation. It's a violation of United States code to be a felon in possession of a handgun. And the fact that he continues to walk free on the streets, and that Eric Holder in this Justice Department won't bring charges against him for felon in possession, is a staggering statement. It's obvious he's breaking federal law, being a felon in possession. Why on earth has he not been prosecuted for this?
Well, let's say there were a rather aggressive radio talk show host that wanted to call in this complaint to someone. Where would the radio talk show host call in order to put this complaint in the hands of the proper authorities?
There's two places that a radio talk show host would call and ask the question, why hasn't King Samir Shabazz been prosecuted for being a felon in possession of a handgun? The first place would be to the Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division. His name is Lanny Brewer. The second place would be the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. That's where Shabazz committed these Felon in Possession Act.
Are you aware of anyone who's made those calls?
I don't work in those two places, so I wouldn't know if the calls have come in. But if nobody has made the calls, then they don't feel any heat. So those two places, the U.S. Attorney in Philadelphia and Lanny Brewer's office in Washington in the Criminal Division of the Justice Department, are the two people that could bring charges against this man if they seem to care about it.
Well, you know, this is just one of those instances where I think someone needs to do something about that, Mr. Adams.
There you go.
Yeah, and we might even go as far as whenever we finish the editing on the show and put it on the air, have those phone numbers attached to the back end of the show. King Shabazz is one of these people who makes, as my dad used to say, no bones about the fact that he hates white people.
I hate white people. All of them. Every last iota of a cracker, I hate it. You want freedom? You're going to have to kill some crackers. You're going to have to kill some of their babies.
I mean, this is a man on the streets of Philadelphia openly saying he's going to kill people, yet no one seems to care. Why?
Well, it's even worse than no one seems to care. When Fox News ran those clips last summer, people accused them of racism for running those videos of King Sameer Shabazz advocating the murder of white people. I mean, that's the crazy upside-down world we've gone to, where when somebody says outlandish things, when somebody gets a break from the Justice Department in a voter intimidation case who says them, and you run these clips, it's the people who run the clips that are being criticized, not the immoral, murderous comments.
A lot of people are familiar with that particular clip of King Shabazz, and I think what they may not be familiar with are a couple of quotes that came from two other people, Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad. Let's take a little listen to Dr. Muhammad and see how he feels about white people.
We kill the men, we kill the women, we kill the children, we kill the babies, we kill the blind, we kill the cripple, we kill the crazy, we kill the faggots, we kill the lesbians. I said, damn it, we kill them all.
The devil is wicked and he's the master of deception. I say in the words of Malcolm X, if you find any good white people, kill them first before they turn bad.
And these are the types of people that Barack Obama, although it wasn't specifically Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, but these are the type of people that Barack Obama had no problem sharing a podium with and marching with in Selma, Alabama. That's one of the big revelations in the book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in March 2007 in Selma, Alabama, there was a big civil rights commemoration, the Selma to Montgomery March. And candidate Obama had just announced he was running. And unfortunately for him, he was having a difficult time getting African-American support. Steve Croft on 60 Minutes the weekend before actually pushed him on this and said, a lot of, you know, people don't think you're an authentic black, because he grew up in an elite home in Hawaii and so forth. So he goes to Selma, and there's a big event inside a church there, a very famous church, and the Black Panthers decide to come to Selma to support him. And one of the Black Panther people, a minister, Shabazz, gets up on the pulpit of the church where President Obama is, and she says, I just want to let you know, essentially, that the new Black Panthers are here to support you. They're outside, they're excited, and so forth. The camera cuts to Obama, who's smiling, and then he gets up and he gives a speech that you have to read about in my book, Injustice. I mean, it just is something to behold. And then they go outside after the service is over, and there's another podium, a second one. And the Panther leader, Malik Zulu Shabazz, who was a voter intimidation defendant who was dismissed, gets up and he gives a speech surrounded by Black Panthers, and Senator Obama also gets up and gives a speech there. Now, Hillary was there too, but the Black Panthers were there for President Obama, or Senator Obama. And after the speeches are over, Senator Obama and the Black Panthers in their uniforms leave together, and they march together, and there's a photograph in my book, which you've got to see, that has the Black Panthers behind Senator Obama, right behind them with Black Power salutes over his head as they're marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama in 2007.
well as we follow along with you in the book, that is the page facing page 105, and he's surrounded by Black Panthers giving the Black Power sign. Let me ask you this. You said the speech within the church was something to behold. Is this the clip that we've all seen of him saying that he's, you know, don't tell me I'm not coming home when I come to Selma, Alabama. I'm here because some people walked across a bridge in Selma, Alabama. Is that the same
one? Well, that's exactly the speech. It's full of outright misstatements of fact. And
well, my understanding is the march took place 4 years after he was born, so it couldn't have had anything to do with him being born.
Well, as I said, his father had already been on his third wife and thrown out of Harvard University and back in Kenya by the time Selma's march took place.
My goodness, that's a good way of framing it. Now, also in that speech, he talked about his father being here because of, you know, this program that the Kennedys had started, but the fact is Barack Obama Sr. was already in the States before that first plane load of students from Kenya, courtesy of the Kennedys, arrived in the United States. So that was a lie too, wasn't it?
Well, maybe he grew up thinking that, so I'm not sure if it was a lie. I know that it was wrong because okay. His father came during the Eisenhower administration, not during the Kennedy administration. You know, who knows what his mother told him? I mean, you can never tell with what I've read about her. So it's hard to know what exactly he really believed.
You basically have been more than willing to just say that there's corruption inside Obama's DOJ. How do you see this affecting the 2012 election?
Well, that's a great question. And there's two big things to point out in regards to that. The first is, I have photos in the book Injustice that are taken inside the voting section where I used to work at the Justice Department. And these photos were taken within the last couple of months. And I didn't work there in the last couple of months. And these are the people, don't forget, who will be enforcing federal election laws next year, who will be looking at voter intimidation, who will be in charge of if the new Black Panthers show up again. And what do you find is hanging on the walls of the offices inside this voting section at the U.S. Justice Department? Well, you can look in the book and you could see that there are posters, campaign posters, hanging on the walls for Barack Obama inside the Justice Department voting section, inside the offices of attorneys there. It's right in the book, Injustice. You can see them in full color. So that's the first problem. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know there's another great poster in there of the signing of the Declaration of Independence that knocked me off my feet when I saw it.
Well, that's very disturbing, that picture. What that picture is, it was taken at Selma, as a matter of fact, at the National Voting Rights Museum. The National Voting Rights Museum are the folks who first organized the Selma to Montgomery commemoration march that we just talked about. And that photograph, which you can see it's actually the first photograph in Injustice, is a picture of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and it says 1776, a Declaration of Independence signed by wealthy white men. So there's a contempt in the civil rights industry by many for America's founding, and that's one of the things I talk about in my book, is how contemptuous they are for basic American principles, whether it's the NAACP or MALDEF, Mexican American Legal Defense Fund. There's a large amount of contempt for America among those groups, among principles like limited government.
As I understand it, under the George W. Bush administration, this case was originally pursued against the Black Panthers. But even then, was there not a decision not to go after criminal charges? Or what was the exact nature of the charges?
You never go after criminal charges first. You always go after civil charges. The burden of proof is lower for civil charges.
Right.
You only have to show preponderance of evidence. You don't have to show beyond reasonable doubt. If you don't understand what that means, ask yourself, who is O.J. Simpson? And so you get a lower standard of proof, and in a civil case, you also get quick relief. In a civil case, you can get an injunction immediately to stop future behavior. So you always do civil charges first, and once the civil case sorts out, you consider criminal charges.
Okay, because you realize that's one of the things that the critics on the left are saying, is that, you know, even the Bush administration realized there was no criminal activity here.
Well, the critics on the left are not telling the whole truth. They don't understand what they're talking about.
Okay, fair enough. I seen that numerous times in various places on the internet. Now, what's interesting, too, is that some of the smears that have already come out against this book, unfortunately, it's all a blur in my head in terms of which leftist website said what. But one of the big criticisms is that they're saying that, you know, Hillary Clinton was there in Selma that day, too. Of course, you know, Christian Adams doesn't want you to know that.
Well, it's actually in the book. I put that in the book. And I put in the book that Al Sharpton was there, too. Both of them are plainly mentioned, and I make it very, very clear in the book that they were there, that they marched across the bridge also. But the difference is that the Black Panthers said they were there for only one candidate, and that candidate was Barack Obama. And the Black Panthers only marched with that one candidate, and that candidate was Barack Obama.
You know, there seems to be a long history of questionable associations with Barack Obama. I mean, you look at Bill Ayers, Tony Rezko, Jeremiah Wright. And he seems to be willing to share a podium with just about anybody. Most recently, Jimmy Hoffa Jr., who only a few minutes before Barack Obama took the podium, had said in reference to the Tea Party, you know, Barack Obama, this is your army, and we need to take those sons of bitches out. Barack Obama gets up on the podium, not only doesn't verbally reprimand him for saying that, but actually makes some nice comments about Jimmy Hoffa Jr. And now we know that he shared a podium with the New Black Panther Party, which openly states that their goal is to kill white people. This is outrageous. I mean, political careers in history have been ended for much, much less. Why is it that Obama is able to do these types of things and escape with impunity?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can tell you what I think is even more important, and I talk about it in the book Injustice. This tendency toward radicalism is affecting the people that are being hired inside the Justice Department. I name names in the book. I describe the radicals that are being hired. There's 130 new attorneys that have been hired in the last 2 years in the Civil Rights Division alone that have been hired from the farthest fringes of the left-wing legal profession. They're infesting the department with these radical attorneys to affect policy. It's one thing for the president to have hung out with Bill Ayers. What concerns me more, and what I talk about in the book Injustice, is that they're now embedding the same sorts of people throughout the government for permanent career positions at about $160,000 a year to effectuate radical change through the power of the Justice Department. Let me give you a couple groups.
Okay.
People who work for groups called, for example, the Junta for Progressive Action, the Queer Resistance Front, the Mexican-American Legal Defense Fund, people who represented Gitmo terrorist detainees. These sorts of attorneys are now being put in career slots throughout the department with massive power. And I name names in the book Injustice. You can read all about them there.
When you add that to the fact that we have a Treasury Secretary who forgot to pay his taxes, I think Cal Sunstein is the one who believes animals should be allowed to sue people, a school czar that once advocated sex between adults and people who were underage, and then you look at all these appointments at the DOJ, is this really one of the wildest, most radical administrations to ever exist in American history? I mean, I thought the Clinton administration was bad.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I gave a speech yesterday in Chicago, and I said that I longed for the days of Janet Reno. I mean, the Clinton administration would not do the things that I described the Obama Justice Department doing in my book, Injustice. They would not sue New York because New York school districts don't allow 15-year-old boys to come to school dressed as transvestites. They would not force State and Ohio and New York Police Department to hire applicants who failed the entrance exams. I give one example after another, after another, after another of radical lawsuits that this Justice Department has brought that nobody has reported on that are simply from the far fringes of progressive policy.
One of the things that you have brought up in recent interviews is a little statement that Eric Holder, I think you said he keeps in his wallet or keeps on his person in some way. Would you share that with my listeners?
Yeah, this is how the book Injustice starts. And it's what's in Eric Holder's wallet. And he talks about this clipping that he put in his wallet in 1971, and he's kept it in his wallet, apparently at least until the interview he gave. And it says, It's a quote from a Harlem preacher named Reverend Proctor, and it says that blackness is the most important thing that defines a black person. It's not anything other than race. And when he was asked about what it meant, he said that the black U.S. attorney it's not the tall U.S. attorney, it's not the thin U.S. attorney, I am the black U.S. attorney, and the black U.S. attorney, and this is the important part, shares common cause with the black criminal that needs attending to. So, I mean, he's carried this thing around in his wallet for 40 years.
Have you seen the clip of Malik Zulu Shabazz bragging about Holder dismissing the charges? If you watch that clip, he's very adamant about the fact that the decision was made because Eric Holder is a black man.
Yeah, he said something along the lines of, and then they got a new administration and the attorney general dismissed the case and he's a black man. It's something like that. I haven't seen it for a while, but I know what you mean.
So obviously in the mind of Malik Zulu Shabazz, race is very important to Eric Holder. Now, when did you first learn that the DOJ under Eric Holder had no interest in pursuing a civil rights violation if the victims were white?
Well, you know, the signs were always there. I mean, don't forget, I talk about in my book in great detail how there is institutional hostility among lots of people not to bring cases in a race-neutral fashion, that only certain people are protected by the civil rights laws. That's something I discuss at length in the book, how during the case in Mississippi in the Bush administration that we brought, people refused to work on it because the defendants were black. I mean, we had an attorney that I name in the book specifically say, I didn't join the Justice Department to sue a black man. So, you know, I detail all of this inside the book Injustice over and over again, this hostility toward equal enforcement of the law.
There is an old saying that if you bring up an issue that needs to be corrected and you don't propose a solution, you're just whining. So with that in mind, how do we end the injustice in the Justice Department?
Well, the next Republican administration has to have the courage to do something about this. Previous Republican administrations have unfortunately viewed civil rights enforcement as something you just play defense on all the time. You don't articulate your own policies. You don't aggressively think of new ways to enforce civil rights laws, such as cracking down on eminent domain abuses in minority communities. Instead, you hire people who have lots of courtroom experience and not just experience in an activist, progressive organization. There's things that can be done, which I detail in the book, if in fact the next administration has the courage to do it.
Well, let's hope that we take back the Senate and take back the White House. Now, the name of the book is Injustice, Exposing the Radical Agenda of the Obama Justice Department. We're going to throw a link up on our website, teapartypowerhour.com, so that people can get to the book quickly. But in addition to Amazon, where else are some of the places that this book is available?
Barnes & Noble should be in bookstores. If you Google Christian Adams Injustice, you can actually get a free chapter. If you go to injusticeinthedoj.com, once again, injusticeinthedoj.com, you can get a free chapter of the book.
Well, we'll put that link up on our website as well. Mr. Adams, again, I want to thank you for the courage that you had to bring this matter forward. I want to thank you for being here today, and I want to encourage all my listeners to go out and grab a copy of this book. I just got mine late last night, and I'm already enjoying it. I plan to finish it, and hopefully at that time, Mr. Adams, we can have you back on the show to go into even more depth with your new book.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for being here. Well, that's all we have time for today on the Tea Party Power Hour. I want to thank all of you for joining us today, and we want to give you those phone numbers that Mr. Adams referenced earlier in the show. If you'd like to call Lanny Brewer, who is the Assistant Attorney General in the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice, call 202-514-2000. If you'd like to call the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, call 215-861-8200. Once again, the question that we'd all like an answer to, why hasn't King Samir Shabazz, otherwise known as Maurice Heath, been arrested for being a felon in possession of a firearm? If you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter, the Tea Party Telegram, just send me a message at mark@teapartypowerhour.com with the word subscribe in the subject line, and we'll get you added immediately to our mailing list. Once again, thanks for being here. We look forward to having you back next week.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.